TechTalk@newstalk.com, as always, is the email address if you want to get in touch. Now, before the break, I brought you my conversation with Brian Clancy, a principal clinical engineer at Beaumont Hospital. He was explaining to me how, when and why robots are brought in to a hospital and the surgeries in which they can be used. And I was very lucky to meet quite a few of the clinicians out there in the hospital, and they told me about their experience with this technology.
Arnie Hill, I'm Professor of Surgery here at the Royal College of Surgeons and Beaumont Hospital. Okay, well, this here is a single port robot. It's the only one in Ireland and the UK, and we use it specifically for doing breast cancer surgery. So through a 2.5 centimeter incision, we are able to take out the entire breast and reconstruct a breast with the woman's tummy. So it's an amazing piece of technology. It allows us to do things that we really couldn't conceive of a number of years ago. It's the dexterity it provides, the innovation that when you go inside the skin, you can essentially move out your elbows to give you greater maneuverability within the, and allow you to do more surgically. So there's a camera on it and there's three arms, and the power of what those three arms can do in terms of maneuverability and flexibility is phenomenal. And for us, we've adopted this to breast cancer surgery, where we're able to, if you like, from the inside out, take the breast out, leaving the skin, leave the nipple areolar complex. And what we're finding at the moment is that women not only preserve their skin and their nipples, so it looks like normal. This is a small incision just laterally. It looks like you have your own breast, but we're finding that sensation is preserved in a significant number. So it really feels like a normal breast. And then the bonus is they actually have a tummy tuck, and that actually is how we reconstruct the breast. Now, we're very lucky. We've got phenomenal plastic surgeons here. We have a team of them who specialize in this, anastomosing the tummy into a very small vessel underneath the arm. So we're very lucky. We've got excellent plastic surgeons. We've got this extraordinary technology. We're at a stage of developing this. We've done over 50 cases. We're now looking at doing a clinical trial to prove its efficacy. And I think it's a very exciting time for breast cancer. So you're saying to a woman, if you know, the most dreadful thing to say is you need to have a mastectomy, but you're now actually saying you can look the same, feel the same, and you also get a tummy tuck. It's phenomenal to actually keep their own skin, their own nipple, and potentially sensation. So it's a real change in our practice. For something that used to be a dreadful mutilation operation, yeah, it's now something where you can actually make the patient feel better.
Were you open to the idea of testing and trialing this technology from the outset, or was it something that you needed to be convinced of yourself?
I don't think I needed to be convinced of. I went to see Antonio Toschi in Turin do this first, and then I went to Dallas to see Deborah Farr, and I was just blown away by the potential of what this can do. And it was technology really being applied to a really important topic of breast cancer. And what we're now about doing is creating the international data to prove its safety and efficacy. And what I've found so far, the patients that have had it done are so, so pleased with it. And that's really what's driving us, because when you meet patients back, you can't but think you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
So it is more for the surgeon. The surgeon has to train in robotics. I find that very enjoyable. It takes us more time to do this operation, but I think it's worth it when you see the outcomes.
Yeah, and particularly for something like breast cancer. And yeah, we've heard so many stories from women here on News Talk where, you know, the removal and the loss of their breasts has been something that has been part of the trauma alongside the cancer. You mentioned their training in robotics. What does that entail? Because I'm sure people are finding it hard to imagine a doctor in scrubs sitting down with a machine like this.
So there's a number of phases. And the first phase would be to train on... it's like doing video games. There's special simulators that you actually go to. It's like before you fly a plane, you go to a simulator. So in fact, that is a simulator there on the back of that robot. And the games, actually, there are several robots, but for this one, the single port, the games are the hardest I've ever played on. I mean, this would make Grand Theft Auto ridiculously hard. So you really have to get good at those games and be obsessive to actually perform well. And it's only then that you go to simulated models, and then you train with other surgeons, and then you're proctored. So the College of Surgeons just last week announced a governance structure for the training of robotic surgery and how this should be implemented. So we're at a very early stage. There's a relatively small number of surgeons doing robotic breast surgery around the world, and we're trying to carefully evaluate to make sure that it's done safely and in the right way for women. And what's most important that I have top of my mind is that we're doing it safe from a cancer point of view. So I'm being incredibly careful, conservative, only doing this on people who it's absolutely safe. If there's any risk from a cancer point of view, we don't take that. So if you look at our last year in my practice, it was only about 30% of women that we offered this to having a mastectomy, and that's because we're very cautious. I think ultimately there'll be far more women that will feel comfortable that it's safe to do it on, but we're just cautious in its introduction.
In terms of, and I know it's still something that you are trialing and looking at, but in terms of patient outcomes, what are the benefits to the patient from getting it done in that one swoop, as you said, with the three little prongs on the endo machine?
It's stunning. They look like they have their own breast. It's the same before as before. They have their own breast, and as I said, if they choose to have the tummy procedure, they get a tummy tuck into the benefit. So happy for everybody. Cancer safe and looking great. It's a real step forward.
And is this something that excites you, for someone who's been in your field for so long? Are you excited by the prospect of the innovation coming in?
Yeah, I think this is extraordinary. We're already talking about version 2 of this robot, and that's where there's the potential to actually see nerves that we never saw before because of different technologies, and we're exploring that. It's a very exciting time. There's lots happening. It's definitely changing, and people get scared, by the way, about the robot, that somebody else is doing it. It's actually the concept of the surgeon is controlling the robot and making use of the technology of the finer instruments, going through smaller apertures, if you like, smaller openings. And so when we use the term robot, it's not as if we're at home. We're here in the room controlling the machine. So maybe robot isn't the best term, but it's certainly gives you a flavor of what the technology is about.
Professor Michael Moore, I'm a consultant anesthesiologist in Beaumont Hospital, and I'm also responsible for the equipment and development of equipment and planning equipment in Beaumont Hospital, and I'm a clinically associate professor of the with the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland. Our job really is, as a consultant anesthetist, is to make sure that people are suitable for surgery, and when we've done that, then we assess their risk and we determine whether or not they should go ahead with surgery or not. So we try then to, when we bring people in for surgery, we have to make sure that the process is as safe as possible. All the monitoring that we use is to allow us to do that, to ensure that they undergo the surgical procedure in as safe and as I said, safe as possible, so that they have a very good outcome. Their outcome is better. The equipment we use for all that is mostly like invasive monitoring, which means that we have to put things into people's arteries, into their veins, into their airways, whatever, to ensure that we can closely monitor their heart, their breathing during the procedure itself. All this, by closely monitoring all that, enables us to ensure that their outcome is as optimized as best as possible, and hopefully potentially have the procedure uneventfully and hopefully go home better. The amateur, if you saw the equipment in the theatre, in the hybrid theatre today, you can see that we have different monitors there. Like, for example, we have cerebral function monitoring there, which is kind of what it calls maximum monitoring. Part of my job as an anaesthetist is to ensure the patient's brain is asleep, patient's unaware or in an unconscious state, but also to make sure the patient's brain is actively looked after, that we monitor it. We don't allow any untoward events happen to it, so when the patient wakes up, they're neurologically intact as best as they should be. The monitoring we use, like cerebral function monitoring by Massimo, is in the hybrid theatre, and that allows us to monitor the patient's brain waveforms, to monitor their oxidation of their brain, and also to deliver the appropriate anaesthesia, which is the exact right amount, not too little and not too much, because either one could be a bad outcome for the patient and worse than their cognitive outcomes.
So in terms of what, because when we were in a theatre there a few minutes ago, I could see that there were an awful lot of monitors in front of you. Has the technology evolved dramatically in, say, the last 10 years in terms of what you've just outlined there, in terms of what you're watching out for?
Yeah, absolutely. Like we monitor things nowadays which we would not have monitored maybe 10 years ago on a routine basis. like we have routine like things, heart monitors, ECG monitors and blood pressure monitors, which we had all those maybe 20, 30 years ago. But it's moved on now such that we now are able to, with invasive monitors, we're able to measure things like cardiac outputs, which is like how much fluid the heart is pumping per minute. We can look at the volume status of the patient, where we can actually determine how much fluid to give the patient or how much fluid not to give the patient, more importantly. The use of, I'd say, cerebral function monitoring, which is routine in all our operating theatres nowadays, wouldn't it not have been there maybe 5-10 years ago? It wouldn't have been a routine thing to do. The monitoring has vastly improved, and it's made us to finesse the technique of anaesthesia, where we used to focus usually on the, it's one important, we used to focus on the body a lot, yeah, like the heart and the lungs and stuff, but actually anaesthesia actually affects your brain, and that's the part that we have to protect the most, because your brain is obviously is the most important organ in your body. Like, all these monitors now allow us to do that.
And because, obviously enough, it's all real-time data, does that mean you can preempt issues or take immediate or alert the surgical team to immediate response and reaction if and when something goes awry?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so with cardiac output monitoring, we're able to determine if there's an acute volume loss, if there's bleeding or something. And we do an awful lot of things in the hybrid theater, particularly endovascularly. So it's all done with the patient's not cut open, they've got small holes, but the bleeding may occur internally. And with this invasive monitoring, we're able to spot it actually much faster than a surgeon would see it. So we would see it straight away, and we would say, oh, there's some bleeding going on, you've got to do something, we need to do something quickly. And they would have to change their approach then to counter that. But if we didn't have the monitoring, we wouldn't see it until we'd had something, it would have happened too late, and the patient would have sustained an injury already, whereas now we can see it early in and act upon it. Other monitoring devices, like we have, look at patients' neuromuscular monitoring. We monitor it continuously because often patients are paralyzed during anaesthesia, and we want to make sure that they remain paralyzed during the procedure appropriately, and then at the end that we can reverse the paralysis. And we do that, we watch their monitoring, their neuromuscular monitoring, and then we're able to accurately reverse the paralysis so that patients don't wake up with a terrible experience where they could be awake but slightly paralyzed, which would be an awful experience. So with our continuous monitoring now, which is displayed on the monitoring throughout surgery, we can accurately determine how much muscle action to give and accurately and appropriately how much when to reverse it. Mm. So yeah.
So this seems like it's a much more personalized approach rather than the generalities of, well, someone who is 10 stone usually gets X, Y, and yeah. Z. You can respond and give exactly what this patient in front of you needs.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so we call it a kind of individualized care. That's what I do. So every patient is different. Every patient comes with different comorbidities. They come with, comorbidities come with different illnesses, and where we're able to optimize them and then to treat them intraoperatively if they go awry. So every patient has their own things wrong with them, which we have to look at and if it take cater for each patient. Mm-hmm. Our use of intravenous anesthesia is in particular a huge change practice in this hospital, whereas we used to use all gases all the time.
Yeah.
We still do, but intravenous anesthesia is becoming much more widespread, and the technology, the pumps we have, are able to, for each individual patient, cater the exact amount of anesthesia that we require. And that's all modern computerized technology, which we wouldn't have had access to 5-10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of focus, so in the situation that we were just in now, we were watching an incredible hive of activity, everything was calm and controlled, but as I said, you had so many monitors in front of you.
Yeah.
How do you ensure, and I'm sure this is a stupid question for someone like you, but just in terms of catching the right things at the right times and not getting overwhelmed by the volume of data in front of you?
Well, I suppose this comes with a vast amount of experience. Everybody, my speciality there is neuroanesthesia, and I'm practicing neuroanesthesia for over 25 years, maybe, you know. And so, for example, what we're involved in there is a maturity type operation, and we know that the reflexes that can occur with that type of surgery. So, I have a vast experience, I would have seen it before, and I know what things to look out for. So, and I pick specific monitors for specific patients for specific procedures. So in that operation, the patient at the ongoing moment required invasive cardiac output monitoring because we need to know the exact amount of volume status that is, so that her brain won't be overloaded with fluid and so after the surgery. And we're using a particular type of anesthesia so her brain will be less swollen or less tense after surgery. So this allows her to wake up in an appropriate, in a quick manner, and her reflexes come back, and we can assess her neurologically very fast. But yeah, with experience over time and individualized care, as you mentioned, we're able to use appropriate technology for each different patient. Mm.
Yeah. And you mentioned there you've been doing this for over two decades. Are you intrigued and approaching this technology with open arms, or is there sort of a cautious approach of, I'm not sure about this just yet?
Well, I suppose I would be enthusiastic about new developments in anesthesia and perioperative care as a whole. And I think that, yes, I'm definitely enthusiastic, but you always have to update yourself. You read the literature, go to conferences, go to meetings, discuss what other people are doing. You don't take every, because there's so many monitoring devices, and you have to pick and make sure the one you're using is the best for the patient. Mm. That takes a lot of time and experience. And you would be slow to change something that works too well,
yeah,
if something's working well. But again, at the same time, you can't be the last person to use technology that's been used everywhere else that you, for the benefit of the patient's life. So it's basically keeping yourself up to date, having other people in our department like medical physics, clinical engineering, everybody else, my own colleagues coming suggesting what they have seen and done, and other institutions around the city and the country, and what their experience of it is too. And so yeah, so I'll definitely am enthusiastic about it. Anything that hopefully make patient outcome better is the whole idea of it. But again, you have to be a little cautious and make sure it's the right thing you're doing.
Yeah, a huge thank you to the team at Beaumont Hospital for allowing me in to witness the remarkable technologies that they are utilising every single day in the hospital. It's one of those things that you have to see it to believe it and to fully understand the impact that this is having on not only the clinical team, but also the patients as well. Some of the stats there in terms of, you know, patient recovery time being reduced, less pain medication being needed. It just makes sense. So hopefully over the next few weeks here on News Talk, we are going to head into other hospitals, meet more medical teams and showcase the innovation that's going on within our health service. But if you have any questions about this, or indeed your own experiences, I would love to hear from you. You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. Right, when we come back here on News Talk, I'll answer your tech questions.